This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Some of Canada's homeless people are being described as frequent flyers, people frequently picked up by emergency services and taken to hospitals or police stations, often multiple times, and the associated costs can be staggering. The Edmonton Homeless Commission reports that one in five visits by EMS and or fire officers was to a homeless person, and that a homeless person is 40 times more likely to use an emergency room in severe weather than the general population is. The top 10 so-called frequent flyers to emergency rooms averaged 66 ER visits per year. A new project initiated by the Edmonton Police Service will target the top 50 heaviest users of the city's police, medical, and inner city services. The project is aimed at better coordinating efforts among the agencies that work the most with the city's chronically homeless. We're joined on the phone by David Berger, Deputy Director of Boyle Street Community Services.
Welcome to People First Radio, David.
Thank you, Kevin.
How did the term frequent flyers first emerge with respect to homeless people in Canada's cities?
I'm not sure of the origin of the phrase or how frequently it's used itself, but it's really meant to refer to people that are complex cases that have multiple needs that use public services repeatedly, almost on an ongoing basis with seemingly no resolution or end.
Is this a pejorative term? Does it mock or make light of the plight of Canada's homeless people or the most needy homeless people?
I think it has elements of that, Kevin. It has a certain flippant quality to it. And we have to be always very conscious of the language we use whenever we're talking about, anyone. But I think if we remind ourselves who it really refers to, as I was saying before, people who are going back and forth into health services, the police system, the jail system, with no end in sight, with no appropriate interventions that end that cycle, then the term itself can maybe be put to the side. But as I say, it is important to, in all our language to refer to people respectfully.
There have been some eye-popping estimates of the costs associated with, shall we say, maybe in another phrase, keeping people homeless, that is providing expensive services again and again but not providing a housing solution. Tell us about the costs associated with this, the estimate, for example, of $100,000 annual costs for each homeless person.
Well, these estimates go back actually quite a few years to when Housing First, for example, first began in New York City. And the economic argument was prepared that it costs roughly $100,000 or probably more to, quote unquote, keep a person homeless. And that's all those services that really keep a person alive, as it were, but not maybe with the great quality of life. So the whole process of people going to emergency medical services at hospitals, of being picked up often for petty crime by police, put through the jail system, and really as an alternative way to dealing with deep-seated issues. The argument has been put forward, and it's almost a mantra now among all people of various political stripes, that it costs less, let alone from a humane point of view, to address people's needs by providing not just housing, but what's often called wraparound services. So one might start with addressing the housing need, but then following up aggressively and comprehensively with all the other psychosocial, financial management, addiction, mental health, the root causes of what brought a person to being and becoming a homeless.
Now, if we look at root causes for the social, I guess you might say, ramifications of homelessness that we began to see with great seriousness about a decade ago, what are the reasons behind the development of this frequent flyer phenomenon. How do these groups of people, they're estimated about 50 people in Edmonton, 40 people in Calgary, how do they become frequent flyers in the first place? And I'm reaching for something beyond their own individual story and something social here.
Well, I think we face some very serious systemic failures in all our provinces, including Alberta, and I'm imagining British Columbia too. And that is our failure to intervene very early in people's lives. And we see people at my agency at Boyle Street Community Services in Edmonton that from the get-go, when they were children, they were abused either physically or sexually and abandoned often by a family and community. And when we see them as adults, they're really demonstrating all the impacts of being abandoned as infants. So their need, for example, for instant gratification, the disability in problem solving, the fact that they didn't complete their schooling, is often attributable to the fact that as babies and as infants and young children, they didn't get the care, and their mothers who were vulnerable didn't get the support that they required. Now, a lot of the folks that we work with at Boyle Street Community Services are Aboriginal, and so many of those folks went through Indian residential school and the trauma related to that. And when they experienced that as young children and young adults, we see the consequences of that in the homelessness on the street often.
Tell us about the project announced by Edmonton Police Chief Rod Knecht. And he made a point in mentioning to the Edmonton Journal that this was not only a cost savings project. That wasn't, in fact, the number one motivation.
Well, we would see it that way, too. At the end of the day, it's about people's lives and the dignity of their lives. And that's what should drive all our efforts. A consequence of doing the right thing is can be cost saving, and that's all well and good. The initiative really started by asking the question, where do we start? What is the most effective way to work together, social service agencies and the police in this case, to make a difference? And the people that the Edmonton Police Service used their own analysis and came up with a number of people, it's at least 50, that are come to the attention of the police and other emergency services very frequently. And we actually had the conversation with EPS and said, isn't there a way for us, multiple agencies, to work with you, EPS, and find a way in an innovative way to work collaboratively, not just one agency with one individual or just with the police service, but multiple agencies working with the community member together and addressing their multiple and complex needs. And we call that cross-agency case planning. And in many respects, the police service would be one of the agencies at the table.
So what then would be the, I guess you might say, the crucial differences in what used to happen and what is going to happen, other than a general concept of working, I guess you might say, more efficiently together? Are there certain mechanisms that will be put in place, or will there be certain elements of red tape that will be dispensed with?
Well, I think we informally, the agencies do tend to work together. They look around and say, who else is working with a particular individual? This will formalize it a little more, and in that sense be more focused and we hope even more collaborative. And not all of these sort of approaches have been taken on, so we will be somewhat starting on a new path in working in an even more collaborative way.
Now, this was announced at the end of January this year, 2013. So it's a fairly newly announced. I guess there's probably a fair amount of anticipation about how this project will roll out. What is the, I guess, what has the feedback been from the frequent flyers, if we can use that term, themselves?
Well, you know, one of the issues, by way of example, is sharing information among agencies. And we're all governed by, you know, Freedom of Information Act and privacy legislation. And whenever we talk to community members who, you know, may deal with the police and the hospital and maybe one or two other agencies, and we ask them, well, can we share information among our agencies with you and about you? Because it's aimed at working more closely and effectively with you, the response typically is very positive. They say, oh, yeah, by all means, if this means I get better service, go for it. And so I see from the point of view of community members that will be engaged in this process, and it's critical that they're at the table. This doesn't happen to people. This has to happen with folks. And I see the community that will benefit from this being supportive. We haven't had, formally any feedback, but we know from our other interactions with the folks that we work with that I think they'll look at this positively.
David, what do you expect will happen as a result of this project?
Well, I'm hoping actually that, you see, the folks that are on the street that repeatedly use services are a very complex group of people with challenges that are quite daunting and are not always solved just by an apartment somewhere in a city or a town with some visits from a support worker. A lot of the folks that we work with actually need a special kind of housing with live-in supports. And I'm hoping that as a result of this, that need in particular gets a higher profile and more investment in that specialty type of housing.
David Berger, thank you very much for taking the time to join us. It was much appreciated.
Thank you. Great pleasure.
David Berger is Deputy Director of Boyle Street Community Services in Edmonton, Alberta.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.